The evening had made me light-headed and happy. I think I walked into a deep sleep as I entered my front door. So I don't know whether or not Gatsby went to Coney Island, or for how many hours he glanced into rooms while his house blazed gaudily on. I called up Daisy from the office next morning and invited her to come to tea. "Don't bring Tom," I warned her. "What? Don't bring Tom?" "Who is Tom?" she asked innocently. The day agreed upon was pouring rain. At 11 o'clock, a man in a raincoat, dragging a lawnmower, tapped at my front door and said that Mr. Gatsby had sent him over to cut my grass. This reminded me that I had forgotten to tell my Finn to come back, so I drove into West Egg Village to search for her among soggy, whitewashed alleys, and to buy some cups and lemons and flowers. The flowers were unnecessary, for at 2 o'clock a greenhouse arrived from Gatsby's, with innumerable receptacles to contain it. An hour later the front door opened nervously, and Gatsby, in a white flannel suit, silver shirt, and gold-colored tie, hurried in. He was pale, and there were dark signs of sleeplessness beneath his eyes. "Is everything all right?" he asked immediately. "The grass looks fine, if that's what you mean." "What grass?" he inquired blankly. "Oh, the grass in the yard." He looked out the window at it, but judging from his expression, I don't believe he saw a thing. "Looks very good," he remarked vaguely. "One of the papers said they thought the rain would stop about 4. I think it was the Journal. Have you got everything you need in the shape of tea?" I took him into the pantry, where he looked a little reproachfully at the Finn. Together we scrutinized the 12 lemon cakes from the delicatessen shop. "Will they do?" I asked. Of course, they're fine," and he added hollowly, "old sport." The rain cooled about 3:30 to a damp mist, through which occasional thin drops swam like dew. Gatsby looked with vacant eyes through a copy of Clay's Economics, starting at the finished tread that shook the kitchen floor and peering toward the bleared windows from time to time, as if a series of invisible but alarming happenings were taking place outside. Finally he got up and informed me in an uncertain voice that he was going home. "Why is that?" "Nobody's coming to tea. It's too late." He looked at his watch, as if there was some pressing demand on his time elsewhere. "I can't wait all day." "Don't be silly. It's just 4:02. He sat down miserably, as if I had pushed him, and simultaneously there was the sound of a motor turning into my lane. We both jumped up, and a little harrowed myself, I went out into the yard. Under the dripping, bare lilac trees, a large open car was coming up the drive. It stopped. Daisy's face, tipped sideways beneath a three-cornered lavender hat, looked out at me with a bright, ecstatic smile. "Is this absolutely where you live, my dearest one?" The exhilarating ripple of her voice was a wild tonic in the rain. I had to follow the sound of it for a moment, up and down, with my ear alone, before any words came through. A damp streak of hair lay like a dash of blue paint across her cheek, and her hand was wet with glistening drops as I took it to help her from the car. "Are you in love with me?" she said low in my ear, "or why did I have to come alone?" "That's the secret of Castle Rack Rent. Tell your chauffeur to go far away and spend an hour."